This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. My guests today in the JPR studios, John Reichman and the Jaybirds, at least almost all of the Jaybirds. Welcome, you guys. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Nice to be here.
John, I want to start with you because you were originally a guitar player, known now as a mandolin virtuoso, but
yes.
You started on guitar, right?
Yeah. As a kid, 12 years old, I picked up a guitar and, you know, fiddled around with it and learned some Creedence Clearwater tunes from my brother and some blues and different things, but ended up, you know, being aware of the mandolin through television shows like The Andy Griffith Show and Beverly Hillbillies, you know, which would feature bluegrass. So I thought, oh, that's that little instrument. That's a bluegrass instrument, and borrowed one from a family friend and never looked back.
Is it true you literally grew up down the street from Robin Ford?
Well, in the same town, yeah.
Yeah,
he was in a band in high school with my next-door neighbor, and I used to go and see him rehearse, or see that band rehearse. And seeing them play was, you know, I distinctly remember that as a big turning point for me, my feelings about music and wanting to play music, because he was awesome then.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's awesome now.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the new acoustic music scene or revolution. It's kind of started in the 70s. You had joined up with Tony Rice Unit.
Yes.
What defines that exactly? What makes it the new acoustic music scene as opposed to playing traditional bluegrass and American string music?
Well, I guess my feeling about it is it was kind of music that was influenced by bluegrass and jazz and to a certain extent classical. You know, my main influence was David Grisman, the David Grisman Quintet. There were other bands on the East Coast doing it too, but David, you know, started playing this music, dog music, with original tunes with Tony Rice and Daryl Anger and Todd Phillips and Bill Amatney. We actually were just listening to that first Grisman Quintet record on the way, the last hours of our long trip down to Medford. And but it's played primarily on bluegrass instruments, at least in that band, except there was no banjo, two mandolins, guitar, bass, and David comes from a bluegrass background. So there's, I think the rhythmic feel comes from bluegrass, but harmonically it's more adventurous with, you know, jazzy chords and whatnot, and you know, pretty complicated arrangements.
You tend to think of a lot of bluegrass folk music coming from a more rural setting, but yet there is a very, very aggressive and active hotbed in California for this kind of stuff. Why do you think that is?
Well, I guess originally it was, you know, folks who moved from the South to Southern California. I know Tony Rice's family moved out from Virginia to get work out there, and Clarence White and his brother Roland and Eric, their family moved from Maine for work. I mean, Maine's not, you know, known as a bluegrass hotbed, but I think in the early 60s that was happening, and I guess the folk music boom in the early 60s had something to do with it, you know, all the colleges. But yeah, I grew up in Northern California, and I remember hearing real traditional bands like the Phantoms of the Opry and High Country, who were still going, play. So, and that was my kind of gateway into Monroe-style bluegrass, Bill Monroe-style.
Well, I definitely want to talk about how you ended up in Canada. Vancouver is considered kind of the home for Jaybirds. But before that, let's hear some music. And before you play, let's introduce everybody else that's here, because we've got an incredible group of performers here in the studio.
Yes. On bass, Trisha Gagnon from Chilliwack, British Columbia. And on guitar, Jim Nunley from Crockett, California. And Nick Hornbuckle, originally from Yakima, Washington, currently living in Nanaimo, British Columbia, on the banjo.
It's John Reichman and the Jaybirds live in the JPR studios. What do you guys want to play first?
Well, we'll do a tune, original of mine, that comes from Canada. I wrote this when I was on Salt Spring Island, which is in the Gulf Islands, just off the coast of North America, and it's called Salt Spring.
Thank you.
That is John Reichman and the Jaybirds live on Jefferson Public Radio. So tell me how you guys, or many of you, ended up in British Columbia. Vancouver, John, for you, and Nanaimo, and elsewhere.
Well, I met a wonderful woman named Gwendolyn.
It's always that, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. Yeah, that seems to be the way it goes. And we met in the late 80s and sort of decided we wanted to live in the same place. And I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I thought, well, I like Vancouver. I think I'll move up there. And it's worked out just great.
Is that a fertile location for making the kind of music that you guys make?
Well, I think so. You know, the first time I went there, I was part of a band called the Good Old Persons. And we were hired by a bluegrass organization based in Vancouver to come up. And their very first concert as an organization that they put on was Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys. So there's a good scene. It's an international city, and there's lots of great music, you know, good jazz and world music. And so I've lived up there for about 22 years now. Mm. And I met Tricia Gagnon, who was born in North Vancouver and currently lives in Chilliwack, British Columbia, which is about an hour and a half east on the Trans-Canada Highway. So she was the only true Canadian in the group.
I see. So you have to hold the flag nice and proud.
I reckon, but I do have American roots as well, so.
Tell me, you guys talked about how on the trip down you were listening to Grisman. Where do your other musical influences lie? What are the kinds of things that you've spent time listening to that have ended up giving you the sensibilities that you have now? Jim?
Well, we're gonna play Traveling the Road West, is that
yes.
right?
Yeah.
My family's from Arkansas, and they brought, you know, my dad played guitar, and he taught me how to play guitar, and my grandfather played guitar and taught my dad how to play guitar. And so they came out during the Dust Bowl and brought with them their music. And as John was mentioning earlier, there was a lot of music that came to California from the South, you know, and a lot of that came during the Dust Bowl, a lot of the music that migrated out with the people, you know. And so for me, growing up there, you know, my dad taught me how to play music, and so I listened a lot to the music that we were doing around the house, which is mostly kind of country and old stuff that he learned from his dad, my grandfather. And then a lot of, in California, there was a huge country music scene, Buck Owens and Merle Haggard and those folks, and Rose Maddox. So that music, you know, I heard a lot of that music growing up in California.
You go back in time far enough, all of those styles start to get really close to one another.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think there was a lot of different styles insofar as the country music, and in fact, the Maddox Brothers and Rose, you know, they were hugely popular, and actually Bob Wilson, the Texas Playboys, and they were really big in around California.
John Reichman and the Jaybirds are my guests today for a live session here on Jefferson Public Radio. Their newest album as a group is called Vintage and Unique. John Reichman's latest solo release is called Walk Along John.
Traveling the road west, traveling the road west. It's a dry, hot, dusty road where you ain't gonna get no rest. Ain't gonna get no rest, boy, ain't gonna get no rest.
Back in 36, we bought us a bucket of rust, sold everything that we had and left that bowl of dust. Days were hot and the timbers, they were too. The drone of the tar on the hot black tar would put a spell on you.
Traveling the road west, it's a dry, hot, dusty road where you ain't gonna get no rest. Ain't gonna get no rest, boy, ain't gonna get no rest.
Left all we ever knew to head for the western shore. Such hard traveling we never had seen before. 4 days on 66 and we lost a tire in two. Spent 2 days in the Texas sun with nothing left to lose.
Traveling the road west, west, traveling the road west. It's a dry, hot, dusty road where you ain't gonna get no rest. Ain't gonna get no rest, boy, ain't gonna get no rest. California, when we sing a different tune, too many hands, so little work and never enough food. Memories come flowing back with the images of the past. Well, I pity the poor and the homeless and pray that they will last. Traveling the road west, traveling the road west. It's a dry, hot, dusty road where you ain't gonna get no rest. Ain't gonna get no rest, boy, ain't gonna get no rest. Road west, traveling the road west. It's a dry, hot, dusty road where you ain't gonna get no rest. Ain't gonna get no rest, boy, ain't gonna get no rest.
That is John Reichman and the Jaybirds live here on Jefferson Public Radio. I want to talk briefly about the Juno Awards. You know, here in the States, everybody's really, really familiar with the Grammys. It's a huge extravaganza. The television show highlights pop music, rock music, hip-hop music, and that's about it. Do the Juno Awards celebrate a little bit more diversity in music?
I think it's more or less the same really? Kind of agenda. As, I mean, there is, I think, an award, I can't remember the name of it, but that features or honors First Nations music there, I believe. But I the category we were nominated in was called Roots and Traditional. Is that right?
Yeah,
something like that. Roots and so it's blues. It's country. Not well. They have country in a separate category, but you know, folk music in general, and being bluegrass musicians, there's no bluegrass category. But
really,
no.
Seems
I
like
think there is with the Grammys, but it seems like I read just recently that the Grammys are rolling all their sort of roots type musics into one category. Yeah. I might be wrong about that. I shouldn't say that on the radio.
It doesn't fit in with the country. Like they don't add it to the country category as roots and traditional category, rather than putting bluegrass in with country. That's my understanding, anyhow.
No, they have they have a few different country categories, but anyway, it was. Great to be nominated. I mean, it's a big country, and there's a lot of great musicians from Canada. And the people we were nominated with were the Ducks the first year when they were just breaking out, and Cor Blund, who is quite well known.
Fantastic.
So it was great. We went and hung out with Shania Twain, and
it's not a bad gig. There's an incredible video online that speaks to music fans. It speaks to historians. That was created about you and your acquisition of your particular instrument. And I want to talk a little bit about that because, we have a classical network here at JPR, and we do a lot of pre-concert talks in front of orchestras. And a lot of the soloists that show up with a cello or violin, this is not an unfamiliar concept to have searched some sort of vintage amazing instrument. Usually these things are multiple hundreds of years old. But when it comes to guitars, mandolins, things like that, we're really only talking 100 or so years to find a, quote, vintage instrument that's really rare and really amazing. And you were lucky enough to come across one. Tell me a little bit about how you discovered that and what it is.
Well, it's a Gibson F5 that was built in 1924 during the time when a fellow named Lloyd Lohr was the acoustical engineer. And that was a real... There were mandolin orchestras. They were really popular from the turn of the century. But around the 20s, when Lloyd Lohr was with the company, the popularity of mandolins was kind of waning. But he helped introduce this new model of F5 mandolin and L5 guitar. And it ended up being the kind of mandolin that Bill Monroe played, you know, who's the father of bluegrass music. So that kind of became the standard for that music. Have a lot of volume. The way it's played now by bluegrass musicians is pretty different than what it was originally supposed to be for classical music, and so it's pretty different use of an instrument its original intent. But they're rare, too. There are only, you know, maybe 300 signed ones. And, you know, when I got interested in the music, I thought, oh, those instruments are so great. They're so cool. I hope I can get one day. And was lucky enough to come across one for sale in Oakland. I was living in the Bay Area and was able to get a loan and then sell all my instruments and got this one. It was about 1981, so I've had it.
And it's only a couple of serial numbers away from one that David Grisman has. Right?
Yeah, he had one when he was starting out that was one serial number away from this. And he was interested in this mandolin. You know, everybody heard through the grapevine there was a Lloyd Lohr mandolin for sale. So he had gone by and he had just picked up this mandolin that was one serial number away from his that he had reacquired. And he thought that's great. And he thought he'd make an offer. But they said, well, this guy, John Reichman, was looking at it, and he knew who I was. You know, I knew him a little bit back then in 81, and I was playing with Tony Rice at that time. So he kind of thought, well, that's great. You know, if John can get it, that's, you know, good for him. And if he can't get it, then maybe I'll make an offer. Mm. So he had greater resources than I, so I appreciate him being a good guy.
Yeah. I can kind of throw this one out to almost anybody, but what is it about pre-war instruments that makes them so desirable? Is it just their age and rarity, or is there a tonal quality to things that were made in that time period that just works differently? Because guitarists seek out classic Martins, obviously, you know, looking for a Gibson mandolin from 90 years ago is something that a lot of artists seek out. What is it about them?
Well, I think they were made really well, and they've aged, you know, the wood ages and the, you know, the playing makes them sound better.
I'm really glad you said that, because one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and again, you know, anybody can chime in, people talk about being able to impart a sound into an instrument. Is that an in your head thing, or does it really happen? I mean,
yes. I think there's something to that. You know, I think this mandolin that I have, when I got it, it hadn't been played for years and years, and it sounded really good, but I think it sort of developed a certain tonality by being played by me and the kind of tone that I get and the attack I get. And it may have ended up being a different sounding instrument if it had gone into the hands of another player.
But how often do you change strings?
That's a really important question. Not that often. I mean, just when they get dead. It depends on how much I play, really.
Because, I mean, if you listened to a recording that you made a month ago using that mandolin and listened to one that you made 20 years ago, playing that mandolin, can you hear a difference in the sound of the instrument?
Well, some of that has to do with the recording conditions and the microphones and all that sort of thing. But I think it has an inherent quality to it that is consistent.
So what you're saying is, if I hear right, you're wishing a sound into the instrument.
Well, I'm trying to, as a player, achieve a certain tone, kind of a dark tone, as opposed to a bright trebly tone. Now, another Jaybird's going to say something here.
Yeah, so in my opinion, what's happening, because John is very generous with his mandolin on the road. People will come up and want to play it. And he almost always first checks for a belt buckle and then hands over the lore. And I've seen a lot of people play that mandolin. I've seen people play Jim's guitar. I've heard people play my banjo. And I don't want to give away a secret, but the reason that mandolin sounds so good is because he's playing it. It's not the mandolin. That certainly helps. And the same thing with Jim's guitar, and I'd like to think so with the banjo. And, you know, if that helps to further refine your answer to your question.
Yeah. So there's a sound inherent in the instrument, but it takes the right player to find it.
There are sound possibilities inherent in the instrument, but it takes the right player to find those and express them.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some really good players play that mandolin, and it just... it's not good.
Not the same.
It's not the same.
It's good, but it's not the same.
Speaking of instruments, we're going to have some photos up later on our website, and I want to include one of the back of your banjo, which is beautiful. Tell me a little bit about where that came from and who made that.
This banjo is, I don't need to go into great detail, but this was made in the 30s by the Gibson Company. And, of course, the 30s was, you know, height of the Depression. And Gibson realized that they had to sell musical instruments, and they had had certain high-level, high-cost instruments, and they wanted to produce lower-cost instruments. but they wanted to make them attractive, like, you know, how crows like shiny things.
Yeah.
So what they did is that they took these banjos and they put, you would call it perloid, but some people call it mother toilet seat, and they made them really fancy looking. It's just kind of make up for the fact that they weren't as high quality, perhaps, as the more, like a Gibson Granada or something. It's just gold-plated maple. It's a very fancy banjo. And this banjo here was originally a tenor, and I had a five-string neck for it, and it's a, for the banjo geeks out there, it's an interesting thing because it's, it doesn't have a tone ring in it. It just has a little hoop, and it's, so it's very light.
It's John Reichman and the Jaybirds, my guests today, for a live session here on Jefferson Public Radio. John Reichman, Tricia Gagnon, Nick Hornbuckle, Jim Nunnally, my guests. What do you guys want to wrap up with today?
Well, I guess we'll play a song that I wrote. This one, I think, is on our third CD, and it's one called Blackberry Bramble.
One, two, three,
four. Blackberry sitting on a bramble high. I've been reaching into the sky. I'm gonna pick me a bowl of stew and have some this morning. The thorns are sharp and the berries are sweet. I've been picking in my bare feet, and I've got a sweetheart down the street who's calling on me Sunday. Blackberry sitting on a bramble high. I've been reaching into the sky. I'm gonna pick me a bowl of stew and have some this morning. Known and sent me picking for a brand new batch. We were just kids, but quite a match. We'd be together someday. Blackberry sitting on a bramble high. I've been reaching into the sky. I'm gonna pick me a bowl of stew and have some this morning. And berries can be a treat, and I'll bake you a pie to eat when you call on me Sunday. Blackberry sitting on a bramble high. I've been reaching into the sky. I'm gonna pick me a bowl of stew and have some this morning. Blackberry sitting on a bramble high. I've been reaching into the sky. I'm gonna pick me a bowl of stew and have some this morning.
That is John Reichman and the Jaybirds live here in the studios of Jefferson Public Radio. Their newest album as a group is called Vintage and Unique. John Reichman's latest solo project is Walk Along John. John Reichman, Tricia Gagnon on bass and vocals, Nick Hornbuckle on banjo, Jim Nunnally on guitar and vocals. Guys, thanks for coming in today.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Yes, thanks so much.